Gregoire and Dan Beeston are smart enough to know better.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 200 of Smart Enough to Know Better. Welcome to the podcast, Gregoire.
Hey, Dan, how are you? We are a podcast of science,
comedy,
and ignorance.
Episode 200.
I know.
It is a very important episode, Gregoire.
It is. It is an arbitrary number.
Do you know why it's an important episode?
Why is that, Dan?
Because it's our 12th birthday.
It's so confusing. It's so confusing. And it's not even the 200th episode. There have been many more episodes than 200 because of our exciting numbering system.
Yeah, yeah, heaps more episodes.
So yeah, many episode, more.
Episode 200, not interesting at all.
No.
12th birthday, oh, very interesting.
No, happy birthday, Dan.
Because you were saying...
Are we a tween?
Were you about to say that 200 is an arbitrary number?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But 12th birthday isn't.
No, it's true.
That's a specific amount of times around the sun.
It is. It is.
If every time around the sun was a bit on a clock... That's a whole half a day. I'm getting too confusing, aren't I?
It's once a day in the clock. You mean like an actual clock?
Like half an old day.
Or analog on a clock.
12 till 12.
12 till 12.
Yeah.
Well, that's still once around the clock.
Yes.
Yes.
And the Earth is like a rock that goes around. So it's a rock around the once around.
We've been doing this for 12 years. Can you tell?
Yes, can be indulgent for this episode. This is not tight at all.
Unlike every other episode, which is a taut string of podcast goodness.
Do you have any favourite moments from the last 12 years?
Many. I enjoy every one of them, actually. Honestly, they're all different. I never know what's going to happen.
That's not how favourite moments work.
They're
all favourite moments. If all of them are favourite moments, then none of them are favourite.
That's a terrible line from a terrible ethos from a good movie, The Incredibles. What a terrible thing to tell people. If everyone is super, no one is super. What a horrible thing to say to people. What a terrible, terrible... Anyway, sorry. If you like that movie because of its message... People yell at us for liking Fight Club, Dan. They don't yell at us for liking The Incredibles. What's that about?
No. But that's the message at the beginning of the movie is the wrong message. The ones that they have to unlearn.
But they don't, though. They don't. In fact, when Mr. Incredible, trounces the small boy who grew up to be a fan and became a better superhero than him, but then became a villain because, you know, whatever reasons, it comes down to, no, you can't be a superhero because we're superheroes. They just acknowledge their superness.
But it's that hubris that leads him to a point where...
He's a bad guy, but Mr. Incredible's idea of... It's all very Ubermensch to me. It's all a bit...
Oh, yeah, but his Ubermensch mentality results in them in a terrible catastrophe.
Mr. Incredible's Ubermensch attitude.
If he didn't have that attitude, there wouldn't be a villain.
But doesn't that line come at the end? If everyone's super, no one's super.
It happens real early.
Oh, okay.
Real early.
If I miss the point, is this another one of Greg misses the point? I don't know if I do.
Kind of, except they don't actually realize that that's not how they should think. They just stop sort of leaning into it towards the end. That's got to be a win on some level.
Yeah, great. I still find it when it occurred to me, I was like, wait, what is this trying to tell people?
Oh, it's very Ayn Randian.
Yeah, that's it. That's the problem.
It's real Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, you're like, just don't worry. You just show it to your kids. It's funny. Frozone gets yelled at by his wife. It's hilarious. You're like, this movie's problematic. Anyway.
For sure.
Anyway, welcome back to the podcast where we talk about old movies that we have problems with. But episode 200, Dan.
Who'd do that?
No one.
Who'd waste their time doing that?
Watching old movies and talking about them to people? No one. There's no market for it. So this is episode 200. A long, long, long time ago, close to 200 episodes ago, we used to start the episode.
Not that close.
We used to start by talking about the number of the episode and what was important about it. So I went and looked up the number 200, Dan, and I found some pretty cool things about the number 200. One of those things that is, it's an abundant number in maths. And that means...
Ooh, does that mean that it has... What's a number made up of? They're made up
it's of divisors.
That's divisors. Its divisors add up to more than the number that they come from.
In this case, it's its proper divisors. So, because 200 is a divisor into 200, goes once into 200. So you can't have
but
that
it's
one.
Also, it's also 2 times 100 and 4 times 50. And.
Yes. Yes. The divisors of 200, I have them here, are 1, 2, 4, 8, 10, 20, 25, 40, 50, 100, and 200. But if we only look at what the ones that are called the proper divisors, which are every divisor except the number itself. So
and one?
No, one's fine. One's fine.
But you include one.
Yeah, one is a proper divisor, yes. Because it's only the number itself is not a proper divisor. So,
okay.
So you just take out. So if you say.
So everyone has one. Every number has one.
Yes, every number gets one added to it, yes, as a divisor.
Unless it's like one of them invisible numbers. Imaginary numbers.
Right. Let's not go down this path. Anyway,
like you can't divide pi by 1.
Yeah, you can. You get pi.
But pi's not a real number, so dividing it by 1 doesn't make as much sense as dividing a real number by 1.
But no, you do. It's just you just get pi. The answer is pi. Gosh. If you have Euler's number, you divide it by 1, you get Euler's number. It's just because you can't write it in a notation doesn't mean that it's not a real number or it's
that
just.
That feels like cheating.
Look, a lot of maths is cheating. Don't at me. Mathematicians.
Why are mathematicians so involved in such a creative and fuzzy science?
Why can't they do something more solid like biology? So yes, it's an abundant number. So that means you, as you said, well done, Dan. If you add all its proper divisors together, then it adds up to more than the actual number itself. So yes, if you add all those numbers, you get 265. He says yes. Sort of thinking about it. So yeah, you get a bigger number. So that's pretty cool. And
that is really cool.
I really like that one. And there's just so people know.
There aren't a lot of those at that point, are there?
There's quite a few. No, there's quite a few. The first one is 12. So yep. The first one, and then they go
which
up from there.
1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 6.
Yeah.
And whatever that adds up to is more than 12.
16. And that gives it an abundance number of 4 because it's 4 higher than the actual number.
Oh, it actually has an abundance number. That's
abundance
cool.
Number, yeah. Yeah, so in this case, the abundance number of 200 is 65 because 265 minus 200 is 200. Now, what this actually has to do in the real world, not too sure.
An abundant number sounds like a Dr. Seuss character.
Abundant number.
Sorry, continue.
I think it does. That's pretty fun. That was a good one. I also discovered that a common ISO of standard film speed is 200. 200, the speed film is 200, but it's being phased out of consumer film in favor of faster films. But nowadays with electronic cameras.
When you say film, you mean in photography?
Yes, like yes. Sorry.
Image
yes.
Attaches to the thing.
Years.
Because in the movies, film goes through it like a different number of frames per second.
That's different.
I was a bit confused.
Sorry. I mean,
ISO.
Yes, the ISO. Yes. So that's all changing though too. But yes,
because you can get really fast film. You can get like ISO 4000.
Oh yes, yes.
And that and the image goes zaps onto that paper really, really quickly, and so it means that everything is really crisp, but it's also very dark.
Mm.
But and you can get like ISO 50. Hang on, I've got a photographer in the room. Hey, Frog Princess. 50. Okay, so ISO 50.
I'm not sure 100%.
She's not 100% sure, but she could be a walk of shame for the princess.
It's just a standard ISO but it is going up faster and faster nowadays, and most people don't use actual film anymore, so you know, it's more fun than anything else.
If you've got a pinhole camera, then you just leave it out for weeks at a time. I saw one the other day where someone had a pinhole camera that went for a year and the pinhole was really, really tiny and they got a picture of the sun changing its position in the sky over the course of a year.
Well, I'm starting to suspect actually that I actually live in a cave in the dark and that my whole reality is just actually light from it and I'm actually making inferences from the shadows projected on the wall.
That sounds like your relationship with your room is platonic. Did I get that right? I'm not a big philosophy guy.
I also have mixed up pinhole cameras with shadows on the wall, but look, whatever. It was a fun thing to say, so let's move on.
Okay.
It's all fine. If you're angry about our references to classical philosophy, you can write in to greg@smartenough.org. Anyway, and the other one which I thought you'd like is the HTTP status code indicating successful connection is 200. Okay.
Yes, I love a 200.
200.
Anything in the 200s is good.
There you go.
Anything in the 300s just means it's going somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. Anything in the 400s is like, anything in the 500s is generally my problem, which is like, oh yes, you did something wrong, son. And anything in the 100s is just like, yeah, this exists.
That sounds like our podcast, isn't it? 100, yeah, this exists. 200, okay!
Yeah.
500, this is Dan's problem. I'll be dead, that's the problem.
I mentioned the error codes. Mm. So 404, very well-known one, means not found.
File not
found.
Can't
find it.
That's
right. There are other 400 ones, like not authorized or bad password and stuff. There is one which is a 418 error. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of this one?
I've not heard of 418.
Okay, the 418 error is 418, I'm a teapot.
Okay.
So back at MIT, if I remember the story correctly, back at MIT, they had a webcam hooked up to a coffee maker, and then someone developed a code for if that coffee maker couldn't provide coffee, which was, oh, I'm not a coffee maker, I'm a teapot. 418, I'm a teapot. It's a joke one they put in. And it just stayed in the spec for years and years because everything was a joke back when computers started, which is why you have like these crazy names. Like there's an operating system called GNU, GNU, which stands for GNU, not Unix. So it's a recursive name. So all these nerds who grew up on Monty Python, the programming language?
Yes.
Named after Monty Python.
I didn't actually know that. There you go.
So as spam. Is a Monty Python reference.
I can see
all
that.
All these nerds got to name everything. And now all these corporations are like, well, we have to do it. And then finally the HTTP spec were like, okay, we have to get rid of this 418 out of the error codes. And they did, and everyone got upset. And so they're like, I'll put it back in, I guess.
It's fundamental.
So 418,
it's fun.
I'm a teapot.
That's very cool. The final one I give for 200 is that if your cholesterol levels are 200 and below, that's considered desirable level corresponding to a lower risk for heart disease. So, wonderful listeners, I hope your cholesterol levels are 200 or below.
Yeah. If it's 419, that's an error code.
14. Or if your cholesterol is a teapot, you're in deep trouble. So before episode 200, Dan, we decided we would reach out.
I mean, that doesn't narrow it down much. That's a lot of episodes.
It's true, Last 12 years. Sometime in the last 12 years, I reached out to the fans and of our podcast to see what they would like to see in episode 200, what they've liked in the last 12 years, what they've liked in all the past 199
episodes.
I don't like giving
them that much power.
And getting
what do they know about what they like?
Damn it. We're the taste generators. Normally a bad one in their mouth.
We're the smell generators.
So we reached out and to ask them what they liked, what segments they like, what they'd like to see come back, what they'd like to see revisited just for one special time, and got a lot of answers back. Also different cool segments, which we are going to try and get to and honor all these different things. But the most important thing, Dan, said by many, many, many people is they just wanted more Smart Enough to Know Better. They said, we don't mind what you do. Whatever you do, it's great. It's fun, but we just want more of it. It's the thing we look forward to. A quote from one person was, it just makes my day to see the podcast turn up in my feed.
I think it's important we provide them with plenty of anticipation. So I'm sure you put them in their place.
Well, I thought, but we said we were going to try and do what they asked. So Dan, we are going to make more podcasts. We're going to give them. We said we talked about this. We're going to make more. We're going to make more podcasts, more and more and more podcasts, because they're going to, if they want more, Dan, we can give them more.
We can't give them that more.
We can give them.
I'm one man.
Well, that's true. Thank goodness there's two of us, Dan, because we're going infinite. Infinite Smart Enough to Know Better podcasts.
Of course we fucking are. Of course we are. Fine, 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 fine. Is that what you want, listeners? Fine. Infinite fucking podcast. I give and I give.
So, what happened to you, Gregoire, this week in science?
I found out something about something I knew about, which I found really interesting. It's always lovely.
That's not finding out something.
No.
That's knowing something.
No. As in, I knew something. I knew about a subject, but then I heard a story about it and found another piece of it I'd never heard before, which I thought was really cool.
You're doing a great job of building up mystery about what this subject is.
Thank you. Well, it's going to be astronomy. We all know me. People all know what it's going to be. It's going to be astronomy related. But so I just wanted to sort of ask you, Dan, when you look at the night sky, what do you see? What's up there? What do you see?
Starlink. I see like a whole bunch of like Elon Musk satellites.
True.
And they sort of blind me and I can't really see anything else. I see the moon.
The moon, yep.
Moon. I see Venus.
Yep.
And sometimes Mercury.
Yep.
And Mars and Jupiter and Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the other ones.
Yep, true. We see the Earth, but that's fine.
Not if I look up in the night sky.
True.
If I'm looking up and I see the Earth, then I have been drinking too much.
Or skydiving, or both.
Yeah. I mean, both is a bad idea.
Mm, oh, yes.
I see satellites.
Yep.
Which, I mean, the moon is one of, but I also see man-made satellites.
Very nice,
I see planes.
Planes.
Bats.
Yep. Yes.
Sometimes see a bat. I once saw an unmanned balloon.
I feel like I'm talking to someone from Douglas Adams' Cricket Men story where it's kind of like, well, what do you see? Well, I only see a tree. I see a top of a building. I see.
You asked what I see when I look up in the sky. These are the things I see. Like, yes, leaves of a tree. If I'm under a tree, I'll see a tree when I look up. Power lines, Greg. I see power lines.
I just love the fact that I think giving most people the prompt of the night sky, yes, you did go to planets, which is great, but you'd normally get to the thing I'm actually after. But no, you were like, I'm just going to tease him with what he think he wants. And then I'm going to bring it down and start mentioning stuff I can see. I'm lying under a table. I can see. He's just getting lower to the ground, listeners.
The ceiling? Sometimes when I look up in the night sky, I see the ceiling. And I'm like, this isn't the right location for this.
How do I find this?
Are you hankering for me to say nebula? Black holes.
Sure.
Pulsars.
Yes, Dash. That's what I'm asking. Now he's getting.
Stars?
Now, thank you. Now he's. I love
stars.
So basically, stars. So we see stars, but what we see is a lot of blackness as well. So there's a lot of dark space out there as well.
Well, you don't see blackness.
No.
You only see light,
that's,
Greg.
That's true.
If something doesn't show light, if something you can't see it, it's not light.
No, we're not going there. That you're wrong and we're not going there.
It feels like we're going there again.
No,
it feels
we're not.
Like you're pushing me to say, oh, I see all this blackness. No, that's exactly what I don't see is blackness.
There is blackness. I think you are.
There is blackness and you don't see it. That's what makes it blackness.
Yes, that's true. So so there's a lot of blackness. And this has actually made people wonder in the past, like 200 plus years ago, because there was an idea of, well, hang on a minute. Based on their understanding of the universe, why isn't the universe just full of light? Because back then, like in the 1820s, sort of around then, people were saying, well, the universe is infinite. They decided that point. So you're talking about people like Newton. And they're also like, okay, they've all made a decision. The universe must be infinite. But they were like, well, if it's infinite, there's going to be infinite numbers of stars. And if there's infinite numbers of stars, then in every direction, there should be points of light in the sky. So the night sky should be the same light seen everywhere. You should just have light everywhere. So why is there dark when we think that there should be light everywhere? What's going on?
Is there another ceiling?
Is there another? Now you're going a bit earlier on. Now you're going back to sort of Tycho Brahe and those sort of people back then who thought that there were crystal spheres inside spheres. But this is post that. This is sort of this is more of people like, okay, there's an infinite universe. What's going on? How does this? Why are we seeing darkness when potentially there should be light? And the example that he gave, Heinrich Olbers. He was saying, well, if you think about a forest, you stand in a forest, there are some trees that are closer and there are some trees that are further away. But you, in the end, if it's a thick enough forest, you see nothing
or
but
you
trees.
See trees.
Exactly. So why aren't we seeing nothing but stars? Yeah. So,
well, actually, I always find I can't see the forest because all these trees get in this way.
It's true. It's very true.
So, but I mean, if you, for light to get to my eye from any place in the like to hit my retina,
yes,
there has to be something giving me that photon in front of me.
Yes.
So I look at any one spot in the sky and all the way through, at some point you're saying there must be something that's emitting a photon in my direction.
That's what they were saying then. If there are infinite numbers of stars in an infinite space, then there should be photons of light coming at you from every point in the sky. Why isn't there? That was the thought process.
But the further away that point that's pushing that photon in my direction is, the more likely there is to be a speck of dust between that photon and me.
You've just had
block. Yeah.
You just had exactly the same. You've worked out what Heinrich Olbers proposed as a solution right there. Well done. Congratulations. So he actually said.
Nailed it.
He nailed it. So his solution was the light from more distant stars must be absorbed by dust.
You're smart enough to know better clock is right twice a day.
So just like Olbers, you're wrong. So basically,
son of a bitch.
So Heinrich Olbers said that his idea was, well, maybe there's dust absorbing it all, and that's why it doesn't reach us. But then John Herschel pointed out, well, actually, if that was happening, then that dust and gas would heat up over time, and it would irradiate light. So it would get hotter and hotter, and you'd have a glowing medium. So you'd have like a warmer thing. Maybe it's just infrared. We'd see it now, but there would be something there absorbing all the light. It'd be glowing and glowing and glowing. It would heat up over time enough to glow. That was her idea.
Hang on, but so something you just mentioned then is that the light shifts.
Yes.
So, I mean, when we look up in the night sky, we can't see all of the light, but that's because it stopped being light and
turned into radio waves. It didn't. It, even at the furthest edges of the universe, we are jumping ahead to universal expansion. Yes, you've jumped to a good point. We'll get back to that very soon.
Cool.
But the universe isn't big enough and hasn't been around long enough for light, so for visible light to turn into radio wave light by expansion. It normally gets expanded out into infrared or far infrared or something like that. So it's not, it doesn't go, I just realized I've upset. If Dr. Natasha just heard that, she may be yelling at me right now. There may be an angry email coming my way, but it doesn't go to radio waves. No, it doesn't go that far, but we'll get back to that. Hold that thought. We'll get back to that thought. So people were really confused. They were like, well, hang on. Why is the night like dark? Like it should be, maybe it's light. And lots of people came up with lots of cool ideas, but the one I never knew, I just blew me away. So this idea kind of got brought up in 1820s-ish. In 1840-ish, 1848, there was a person, a famous person. He had a lecture in a New York library where he got 60 people to come and listen to his reasons why he thought that the universe had dark bits and not all light bits. And that person was Edgar Allan Poe.
The Raven Guy.
The Raven Guy. This is the part that blew me away. This is what I've been trying to get to. I just went, what? So Edgar Allan Poe had a think about it, and he wasn't necessarily considered a physicist. But he had education. He had a think. Back then, everyone had
liked darkness.
He did. He had a whole story about a pit.
Darkness.
You know, that one about the pit, and he's trapped in a room, and there's a big hole in the ground, and he only realizes it's there because he's crawling around in it, and he realizes the pit, and it's a whole horrible thing. Anyway, so he was all into that sort of stuff. He said, well, yes, if the universe is infinite, but maybe it started off as a finite sphere of matter. And then if that then was split up and was repulsed by some sort of repulsive force, then now you'd have discrete areas of the sky, some with stars in them, some with not stars in them. That would explain what we see. And what's weird about that is he kind of hit it on the head, as in, this is before we thought the universe is starting from the Big Bang from a point. But he went, well, maybe there was a finite sphere of matter that's being pushed out into an infinite universe by a repulsive force. And now we have the idea of dark energy repulsing the universe. And we have the idea that all matter came from a singularity or some sort of beginning point that got spread across the universe. He kind of nailed it, which is pretty impressive.
So the universe is infinite, but the matter in it is not.
That's our thought process now. Yes, that's right. There is finite matter and finite energy inside an infinite. Well, not, it's a infinite but bounded universe. Remember, it's expanding, but it's not, it does have an edge, we think, but we don't because it's expanding.
Yeah. Why do we say it's infinite then?
Because it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
But is it potentially it could stop getting bigger and come back, right?
There's lots of questions about that. Is it infinite inflation? Is it inflation? Maybe the whole idea of the big crunch, we don't think that's a thing anymore because of this repulsive force. There's not enough mass to hold it all together. Well,
if we've got a finite amount of stuff in here, then that means that then it doesn't matter how big it gets, it's still finite.
But space-time itself is expanding infinitely. Space-time isn't a thing. It's not you can't hold space-time in your hands. It's not like a photon of light of any size. It's the fields that the universe is made out of.
Oh, God. I wish I could just see a shadow of this on a wall.
But
maybe that would make more sense.
In fact, it was Edgar Allan Poe. So I just want to just we'll move on very quickly. So it was then decided, it was suddenly realized as time went on, like only quite recently, like the 1860s, physicists started realizing that stars have finite ages. Even if the universe is infinite and will last forever, even if that's true or not, even if the stars live and die, so that they're not always projecting light forever. So that's another reason why you're going to have, not light everywhere. Also, it takes time for light to reach us because, the universe is expanding. We work that out. The universe is actually expanding. And that's why we can't see anything. But
I guess there are places in the universe where if you look up, all you see is the bright universe.
Oh, could you imagine?
Like, if you're inside the sun.
Well, even if you were like much, much closer to the galactic core, our closest neighbor here is like 4 light years away, Alpha Centauri, Proxima Centauri. And if you were in the center of the galaxy, then you would be surrounded by a lot more stars and more clumped together.
Yes, we're on the outskirts of the Western Spiral Arm. Yeah,
unfashionable, I've been told. And I think if I remember correctly, if we were in the center of the galaxy, we'd have stars like half a light year away, like much, much, much closer, 8 times closer than, and that would be a lot more of them too. And bad things would be happening to us. We probably wouldn't be here. I just want to go back to the other point you made before about the expansion of the universe. Mm. Technically, the light sky is awash with light at all times.
Mm.
It's just light we can't see.
Right.
So it's the cosmic microwave background is constantly in the sky. We've seen pictures of the cosmic microwave background. And that's light from the earlier on in the universe. It's been shifted to longer. That's visible light. It's been shifted to longer and longer wavelengths into microwaves. And it's there. It's radiating down on us. We just can't detect it with our flimsy human eyes. But with our amazing equipment, we can. So there is light. The whole sky is ablaze with light, just not visible light.
Could potentially be an Edgar Allan Poe poem, which is like, once upon a midnight endless.
Ooh.
While I sleep there, want to spendless. Which brings us to our sponsor for this week's podcast. Do you struggle to get a good night's sleep? Well, the mattress that you buy.
The Nevermore, delivered by Raven. Or it won't be.
Yeah. When's the due date for it to be delivered?
Please,
problem with that.
Please pass over and patching you into our public servants announcer. Nevermore! Nevermore! Thank you.
Okay, well, I'll go to the ombudsman.
Anyway, Edgar Allan Poe, more of a dude than I thought he was. That was my week in science. Thank you. Do you have a week in science, Dan?
I do. Just a little tiny one, which is good because we're like halfway through the podcast now. I do have a little tiny one. I hate headaches. You told me once that you never get headaches, and I am so jealous. I don't get headaches very much, but when I do, I can't stand them. And I realize the reason I can't stand them is because the pain is up here. Mm. If I hurt my foot,
it's inside the house,
the pain is down there. Mm. And I was like, well, what does that? What does that mean? Like my eyes, they're up here, and my nose is up here. And my ears are up here, and my knees are down there. Mm. But where's the boundary?
Mm.
I'm like, what about my heart? And I think, oh, my heart is up here, but my belly button is down there. So we're getting close.
Oh, I see what you say. Where do you count as up there or down here?
Up here or down there?
That's odd. I had never thought of it that way.
I know. And every time I bring it up to someone, they're like, "You're weird."
Yeah, I don't.
What are you talking about?
I don't think of my heart is down there. I always think my heart is there and point to it or think, but I don't think it was down.
Like if you had to split things up into up here and down there.
Up here and down there.
Where are your nipples?
Where am I?
My nipples are up here for me. My heart is up here.
Is it relational? Is it
my belly's down there?
Is it a relational thing? So you're saying maybe your brain's saying, okay, on my torso, I have a torso, therefore my nipples are up here because it's the top of the torso, how we stand up, but our belly button is below that, therefore it's at the lower part of the torso, therefore it's a relational thing for you.
Well, my hands are down there and my elbows are down there and my elbows are at the same
level.
What
if you put them above your head?
Well, I mean, that's not – they're up there.
Yes, now they're up there. Okay, yeah.
But they're not up here. They're not here. They're up there.
Okay.
And what about your shoulders? Are your shoulders up here or are they out there?
I really don't have an answer. I'm confused by the categories that you've picked.
Some people have had the same reaction.
Yep.
And I wonder what our listeners think. So I'd love to hear from our listeners. Is your neck up here? Is your belly button down there? Where is the line between up here and down there? Or do you just hate that I've even asked the question and I sound like I'm speaking riddles?
I like to think of my left shoulder as west, northwest.
That sounds like you've taken a funny turn. There is one Greg Waugh. Now imagine. You agree?
Yes, there is. There have been many imitators, but only one.
I was very concerned where you're like, where it looked like you were harboring a secret. He's like, oh, he's onto us. Quickly disintegrate the vats.
It's the prestige.
Okay, so there's one Greg Waugh. Now imagine Greg Waugh times by Greg Waugh. You got that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now do that again. Imagine Greg Waugh to the power of three.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds very powerful.
Well, it does, but it's still only one person.
Yes, but how powerful?
Oh, okay, right. Excellent.
Put all of that aside for this.
Okay, right.
But you are about to get cubed.
Sasquatch or Bigfoot, who is who? It's all going down at the Crypto Zoo.
God rolls a 38 on the wandering monster table. Gelatinous cube! Gregoire. Tell me all you know about the gelatinous cube.
This is a Dungeons and Dragons monster, if I remember correctly, and a gelatinous cube is like a terrible living trap that the Dungeoneers will find, that they'll be wandering along and they'll look around a corner and they'll go, oh, the light looks a bit weird down there, but it's probably just a torch. It's a funny green torch instead of a lovely yellow torch. We're just going to walk down this very open corridor where nothing's in. Oh no, I seem to have walked into a gelatinous mass that won't let me out and is also acidic and starts to dissolve you inside. That's how it eats. So I don't know if they can move. They can probably fall from great heights onto you or whatever, or you fall into traps. I don't remember if they can chase you down hallways. I don't see how they would. But they're a bit of an ambush predator, or at least a trap predator.
Well, they have to get to where they're
Well, could they just grow there? I don't remember enough if they can move or not. But, yeah, the whole thing is they're translucently transparent, and they're transparently, basically transparent, and then you accidentally walk into them. And then they devour you. And one of the ways you know that they're there is that, well, A, the weird light, but also you go, why is that sword hanging in the center of the corridor and that suit of armor that it couldn't dissolve? And why is that skeleton, if it's, you know, a skeleton?
But acid can dissolve suits of armor.
Well, it can, yes, I guess. It just takes longer, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about acid then.
Okay, cool.
Because organisms love acid. Ants spit acid from a poison gland.
Mm-hmm.
Oranges make acid to make their...
Well, it's not really a poison gland, Dan, is it? They just spit acid, formic acid. It's not poison, it's just acid.
It is described as a poison gland.
Oh, there you go. But
I guess, I mean, poisons have often acidic, right? That's how they interact with stuff.
I guess, I suppose a poison is anything. Anything can be a poison at the high enough dosage. That's the old adage, yeah. I guess.
And you don't need a very high dosage when it comes to acid.
No, true. Okay, sure. Please, sorry, go on.
Oranges make their meat acidic to prevent infection. You get your citric acid.
You just say oranges make their meat acidic.
Yeah, orange meat.
Orange meat.
The meat of an orange.
Meat of an orange. Good. Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Good.
The
good.
Flesh.
The flesh.
The flesh of an orange.
Yes,
the
flesh is fine. Flesh. Isn't that funny? Yeah, isn't that funny? I'm happy to accept flesh, but the meat, I'm not. I'm like, no.
The meaty flesh of a blood orange. The zombie worms will exude acid to help break up the whale bones that form their diet.
Yes.
And we gentle primates fill our stomachs with acid to break down food.
Mm-hmm.
If our bodies were the same pH as the acid in our stomachs, something has gone very, very wrong. We need to be protected from that acid. But some organisms revel in an acidic environment. We call these acidophiles.
Mm-hmm.
So enter the gelatinous zooplankton or the jellyfish. They are more than happy in an acidic environment,
mm-hmm.
which is good for them as our oceans get more and more acidic. They are able to navigate slightly by sensing the water temperature and the light and by rising and diving depending on those inputs. There is some decision-making taking place. For the listeners who can't see me making the air quotes, they've Funny heard is. Them, hopefully. They don't hunt their prey.
Mm.
They simply float with the currents.
Prey blunders into them.
Yes. Yes, it does.
And it hurts. Oh, listeners, it hurts when jellyfish stings. Oof. Yeehaw.
You've been stung by it.
Quite a few times, yeah, unfortunately. Yes, yeah. Well, a couple of times, yeah. And some bad ones too, actually. Yes. And like Irukandji and that stuff can just flat out kill you, stop your heart. But yes. And when they don't, jellyfish, it hurts. It hurts in a way. Make you wish you were dead. And they're set up in a way that if you try and take off the tendrils, you rip them off, but the little poison sac just keeps pumping the horror into you and it continues to hurt. And so you should, of course, put vinegar on that or something acidic on it to get rid of it.
Acidic or
vinegar, baby.
Alkaline.
No, vinegar, baby. Vinegar, vinegar, vinegar.
So, but aren't they acidic?
It's vinegar. People say pee on them. Please don't pee on people. It's definitely. I'm willing to be. It's acid. It's definitely acid. It's vinegar. We used to carry vinegar.
No better. Do not want to kink shame. If you want to pee on someone, if consenting adults.
Yes, we used to have vinegar in the boat and near the. Anytime we went near the ocean, we had vinegar with us just in case. And thank goodness for that.
Yeah, so,
vinegar was the. Yeah, neutralise what was going on inside you.
Yes, there's like vinegar containers all up the north coast of Australia. Yes. Emergency vinegar.
Yes.
For jellyfish and chips. Jellyfish and chips sounds like a great name for a cafe, but not a good menu.
Mm.
I've eaten jellyfish. It's rubbish. Now, speaking of jellyfish and eating.
Yes.
Our gelatinous cubes are not jellyfish.
Aren't they? Because
jellyfish have a mouth.
Hmm.
Like, they've got skin. Like, you can't get through an jellyfish's skin. It's got a membrane.
Yes, true, yes.
They pull things into their stomachs rather than just enveloping them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they open their stomachs up and let everything else out so they don't have a bum.
It's true.
So, your gelatinous cube absorbs its prey. So we're looking for something a little bit slimier. Any ideas?
What it could be, some sort of slime mold that's transparent.
What a beautiful pick.
Well,
what a great pick.
The only reason I thought of it was because slime mold, I just happened to be, because, you know, I'm a sophisticated man of the 21st century and another thing I like to do at nighttime after a hard day's work is to sit down with a glass of scotch and read about slime molds. Watching far too many YouTube videos about slime molds and hoof trimming, which is not really relevant to the conversation. And
we're on a very similar algorithm, I think.
And the slime molds, baby. Oh my goodness. Something without a brain making decisions that can get around problems. It can survive all sorts of things. It can grow in the right directions. It can do what it needs to do without a brain.
Mm.
Ooh. So that's why I thought of it as a potential.
That's a great idea. So let's talk about Myxogastria, or the slime mold.
Ooh.
Now, this little beauty can happily survive in highly acidic conditions.
Hmm.
It's not a mold. It's a eukaryotic organism. Hmm. So it starts its life as a teeny little spore cell. It buds into a tiny crawling thing, and two tiny crawling things will meet and share their DNA.
Oh, sounds like people.
Oh. Yeah, it does sound like people.
Sounds like dating. Oh,
That's sex, baby. That's sexual reproduction. It's an amazing thing.
That's true. People really like
ladies.
It.
Ladies. But- it's episode 200. I couldn't not. Okay. So if the conditions are right, maybe it's a celebration. I shouldn't have done that joke.
And that's
okay. If the conditions are right, they will enter a plasmodious stage.
Ah, yes. Early 20s. Get a house together. That plasmodious stage.
A plasmodious stage is a great place to do an impro show.
The plasmodious, or it's a very structurally unsound way to deliver mail.
Look, that's good because impro is a structurally unsound way to deliver entertainment.
We're so mean. We're so mean.
Okay, so this plasmodious stage of our slime mold, they become a macroorganism, a thin, sticky slime that spreads out, digesting everything it comes in contact with. Mm-hmm. They can grow to 5.5 square meters.
Wow.
And as you have pointed out, they can also learn.
Yes. Clever mold, which you're Clever not a mold. Mold. Sorry, it's not a mold.
If they move in one direction and can sense they've been there already by the taste of their own dried matter on the ground, they will instead strike out in a different direction. Yeah. They can smell food.
Smell?
Once those smell detectors on the organism sense food, they will pulse and move in that direction. That means, Gregoire, they hunger.
And they hunt.
In a famous experiment, researcher Toshiyuki Nakagawa and his team gave their slime mold a real-world problem, find the most efficient transportation network in the greater Tokyo area. Mm. So they made a map and they put oat flakes to represent key towns and cities. They put their slime mold in the center where Tokyo would be. The resulting growth of slime mold looked an awful lot like the actual Tokyo rail system.
Can I give some more information? I knew that part, but can I give it more information on that? When they first did it, it failed miserably. And they were like, this is nonsense. This stupid thing is too stupid. And then people were like, why didn't this work? And they went, oh, it doesn't know that mountains exist. It doesn't know. And Japan's a mountainous country. So it just went in a straight line. So they went, wait, and they put up walls it couldn't, or they put barriers of chemicals it didn't like that it had to go around. And then when they redid it, then it made a very efficient map of the railway system that they, as I said, looked like the railway system. It found the most efficient route to get to the places.
Wow.
And also because there are different parts of it, because it reinforces the strong connection between certain areas. So anywhere there's lots of food, so big cities, it made stronger connections, which would be more rail lines or that. It corresponded. I was like, I was so excited when I saw that.
That is neat.
And terrified.
Yeah. Also, they can reform when they're torn apart.
Mm.
And if you tear them apart and then you teach one how to make a city, then you add the other one, the knowledge goes into all of the slime mold.
They're learning.
Now they are, however, quite flat, so we're quite close to making a horrible gelatinous carpet
maybe.
But we need to strike out into the third dimension. But in order to build vertically, we need something rigid. But rigid generally means a skeleton, which means no absorbing things.
Yes.
You got like this hard skeleton. What if, though, you're able to create a skeleton by absorbing stuff around them and converting it into very small bones that gave the form structure, but any one part of it could be broken and rebuilt, kind of like a thin coral mesh throughout.
A lattice. How about a lattice, Dan?
A lattice. Oh, that's good.
A crystal lattice, a crystalline lattice. So, and that means it'd be translucent too.
If we have a delicate mesh of partly connected calcium carbonite filled up with acidic slime mold, you'd end up with a big acidic blob of horror. Except there's this thing that calcium does in the presence of acid.
Mm-hmm.
Gregoire.
It dissolves.
Yeah, it dissolves. It reacts.
Yes.
It reacts. It's carbon, baby. It's carbon and that's what acid is it's a thing that eats carbon.
Yes.
So we need something that doesn't react with acid.
So like a basic or some sort of neutral thing.
Well, what do we keep acid in, Greg?
In glass.
How about silicon. Could an organism take the silicon into its environment and build a frame out of it?
Hope not.
Does that seem like science fiction to you, Gregoire?
Well, it's, I mean, we do talk about silicon and carbon. You know, people go, well, maybe on other planets there's silicon-based being blah, 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 because they're one's below the other on the periodic table and they have similar chemical thingies. So the answer is no, Dan. I don't see why silicon couldn't be. It's just not as energetic.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't have as many connections
as carbon.
On Earth? Yeah. I don't see why.
You reckon there's silicon-based creatures on Earth?
It would be no. There's definitely not. But that's because carbon's just more efficient at doing it and gets more energy.
It's much more efficient at doing it.
Yeah. So
it'd be crazy to have a silicon structure in a creature on Earth. Let me tell you about my friend, the glass sponge. The glass sponge is a carbon-based creature, but it absorbs the silicon in its environment and converts it into a fragile quartz skeleton. So it's like, it's carbon-based, but it's silicon's fine. I propose that our gelatinous cube makes the same sort of structure. We are almost all the way to working out this monster, Gregoire.
Right, good.
But there's one really crucial part that we're missing. Our blob here is quite amorphous, and a cube is a very amorphous thing indeed. It's almost the most amorphous you can get.
It's also quite platonic. It's, yep.
So what would make our blob become a cube?
That's a problem, because if you're talking about efficiency, energy efficiency, it would be a sphere. A sphere would be the best shape for it to fit into. And it definitely doesn't want to go into a cube-like shape. So it could be that it's its environment, because it's in a dungeon. If you want to go really boring, it's like a puddle. So it's just fit the space of the 10-foot by 10-foot
so
dungeon.
It grows into the, that makes sense, some sense.
If we're talking about that, but
Well, it turns out that cubes happen more often than you'd think in nature.
Ooh.
In fact, they happen all the time on average. If you put a bunch of lines at random on a piece of paper, a bunch of straight lines, the most common shape would be a four-sided one.
Mm-hmm.
So just through statistics.
Right, okay.
So if you extrapolate into third dimension, the most common shape that an object would break into is the cube.
Right.
So if you take a look at a glacier, you get a sense of the shapes that want to break off from the front of it.
Yeah, when they're carving.
Because while pressure is like a sphere, like the most, as you said before, when something starts to fracture, it continues to fracture in a straight line.
Okay.
So you end up with a sphere with flat edges, which is more like a cube.
Sure.
Okay. So, and in that case, then you should have like something the same width and height and depth splintering away. Nature wants to form cubes.
Okay.
So somewhere in that dungeon is the mother blob. As it grows and grows and gets more weight to it, it fractures off a shape that's the same width as it is tall, the same height as it is deep. It can smell you and it hungers. Cube.
I love it. Now in my head, I'm just imagining somewhere in a dungeon, something goes wrong. And one of them just starts producing triangular prisms. And now you have like a civil war between different shaped blobs and all desperately trying to like enveloping each other, like trying to fit the perfect shape together.
And then it's Daleks all over again.
round ones rolling into places going, we are the best. Yeah.
The shape wars. Unfortunately, whilst on average it's squares and cubes, that's only when you count them up.
Yes.
There's lots of outliers.
There'd be lots of weird blobby ones that weren't perfect cubes. That's right. Yeah,
but then they wouldn't fit into the dungeon, I guess.
And also maybe they get eaten. Maybe they get wiped out. Maybe it's like real. They're like, no, you're not perfect. And you just get instantly destroyed.
Wow. We just went real Third Reich.
We went really, really Andrian, just like
power,
the Incredibles.
The power of Third Reich. Oh, no, it's Fourth Reich, isn't it? That joke doesn't work, does it? Wait, what's the Nazis? Third Reich or Fourth?
The Fourth, I think it was Fourth Reich. Was it Third Reich? No, they were the Third Reich. They were the Third Reich.
Third Reich? Oh, the Third power Reich. Of Third Reich. Oh, yeah. Joke works then.
Joke works then.
It's not tasteful, but it works.
Thank goodness.
Welcome to the Walk of Shame.
This is when, normally when, because Greg speaks a lot and just tries to remember things at the top of his head, then he invariably makes a mistake and then listeners gleefully, with far too much excitement, email Dan and point out how I stuffed up. Rarely it turns around the other way, but when it does, it's so sweet. Mm.
Well, no one did that this week.
Oh.
It was a bit of a shame. It seems like a big, you know.
Oh.
The episode 200, the 12-year anniversary, no proper walks of shame.
That means I didn't stuff up 199. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, so, yay me. Well go done. Me. Go, Gregoire.
Well done. We did have a little chat about how long a week is on Pluto.
Yes, yes.
Because we were like, oh, yeah, it'd be huge because it takes so long for it to go around the sun.
Yeah, which, of course, is a year.
A week is not 1/52nd of a year.
Well, we said that, though, didn't we?
We discussed this. We organized this. But then we were like, I wonder how long a week is. So I looked it up.
Okay.
Let's start from the beginning of the solar system. Mercury. A year is 88 days.
Okay.
So 1/52nd of that, which is not a week.
Yes.
But 1/52nd is 1.7
days. Wait. You've defined a week as 1/52nd of a year. Not 7 days.
A week will be 7 days, but we got it wrong initially.
Yes.
So I'm going to tell you what 1/52nd of a year is for all these planets first.
Okay, good.
Yeah, okay. So these are all wrong.
Right. Okay, right. Yes. Okay. Yes.
But yeah, if it's 1/52nd of a week.
Yes. A year.
On Mercury. Which is a year is 88 days on Mercury.
Hang on, stop. Don't. You just said 1/52nd of a week.
1/52nd of a year. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Should start listening to myself. But then no one should. 1/52nd of a year on Mercury is 1.7 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty quick.
Okay.
On Venus, it's 4.3 days.
Okay.
Okay. On Earth, 1/52nd. Of a year is 1 week.
Good. Phew.
Which, for listeners, that is the time since you looked at me, cocked your head to the side and said, I'm angry.
But it's 3 days since the afternoon. I don't know the rest of the line.
Don't overcomplicate it.
Okay, sure.
So Mars, 686 days in a Mars year. Mm-hmm. So that's 13.2 days.
Earth days, of course. We are saying Earth days here. That's
Earth days?
Yes.
No.
Yes. Wait. Yeah, because it is, because they have souls.
Yes, you're right. These are all Earth days.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so there's 13.2 Earth days in 1/52nd of a Mars year.
Okay, right. Okay. It's very confusing. That's fine. Okay. It's all wrong. It's all wrong, listeners. It's all. Yep.
So Jupiter, 11.9 years to go around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So 1/52nd of a year is 83 days.
Nice.
Which sounds like it would be good. But you want your holiday to be relaxing, and holidaying on Jupiter, there's a lot of pressure.
and the radiation. Actually, it's the radiation I worry about. Because you could be further. Anyway, so I know it's not what you're trying to get into, but, oh, Lordy, it's like you would be cooked. Like,
it's very radioactive.
It's not radioactive. It just has a very powerful magnetic field. And so you're going to get a lot of
magnet.
A lot of magnets. So all your magnets are going to get all your digital media will be totally wiped.
You wouldn't unbind or anything.
Because of the strength of the magnetic field, you're getting a lot of like solar wind, like charge particles charged at you at multiple speeds. And that's going to do ionizing radiation. And that's going to, it's not radioactive, but there's a lot of ionizing radiation because of this massive magnetic field.
So the magnetic field is not doing the damage, but it's drawing in stuff that does.
And accelerating things. Bits around, and that does horrible things to you. Don't stand on Io. You get between Io and Jupiter. Yeesh. Yeah.
Ooh, right.
Don't do that.
Okay. All right. I'll stand on the other side then next time. Okay. So Saturn takes 29.5 Earth years to go around the sun. So 1/52nd of that is 207 days.
Nice.
Uranus. Am I saying that right?
Mm.
Takes 84 years. To get around the sun. So 1/52nd is 590 days.
Wow.
Neptune, 164.8 years to get around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So 1/52nd of that is 1,157 and a half days.
Okay, cool.
And finally, on Pluto.
Then, and I'd like to point out, it's not a planet. All the ones you've mentioned are planets. It's not a planet. It's a dwarf planet, which is a planet, but it's not one. Just point it out.
So it has an orbit of 247.94 Earth years. Mm. So 1/52nd of that is 4.75 Earth years, or 12,928 weeks.
Nice.
That's not right.
That seems very big.
That's wrong. My brain is breaking. Plutonian orbit is 1,740 days.
Earth days, that's right.
So vacationing on Pluto seems like the most time off. But a week is an actual thing.
Mm.
It's a thing, Gregoire.
Mm-hmm, mm.
It's an arbitrary thing, but it's a thing.
Yes.
It's 7 days. So this mixes things up completely.
Yes. So all these numbers are based on the idea that if all these planets rotated once on their axis, once every 24 hours, in 7 rotations of its axis, we would count that as a week. That's an Earth week. Yep. But those planets do not rotate once on their axis every 24 hours. Only Earth does. Mars comes kind of close. So 1 day.
Yes.
And then you want 7 of those.
Yeah.
Yes.
So doing 1/52nd would only make sense if each planet was rotating 365 times every time it went around the sun.
That's right. Yes.
But that's not the case.
That is not the case. Absolutely not.
Day on Pluto, how fast it spins around? That's 153 hours.
Wow, very slow.
Around.
Yeah.
So that makes 7 days, 1,071 hours.
Right.
Which is a drop from 1,740 days.
Yes.
Like, that's quite a drop.
Yes.
That's an enormous drop. So Neptune is only 4.5 days.
Right.
Which is heaps smaller. You barely get over your jet lag before you come home. Uranus drops to just 5 days.
Right.
For your week.
So how fast is Uranus rotates very quickly then?
Yeah, very quickly.
Ah, there you go. Excellent.
Yeah. It sits and spins.
It sits and spins. That's right.
Yeah. Saturn, which was massive, drops down to 3 days.
Yeah. It spins super fast.
Yeah, super fast. Jupiter, also 3 days.
Yeah. I think Jupiter's day is like 10 hours, 10 and a half hours, something like that. It's really fast.
Yeah,
it's
real quick.
Real fast. Something that massive. It rotates so quickly. We haven't used the word oblate spheroid for a long time on this podcast, but Earth is an oblate spheroid because it spins and it's sort of crushed at the top because it's spinning out, like, centripetal force sort of pushes everything out. And Jupiter spins so quickly, it's really quite pronounced how much it's squashed because, it's not that solid. Yeah, it spins super fast.
Yeah. Mars, 7 days, is 7.25 days.
Yeah. Mars has
holidaying on Mars, no real difference. So Arnold Schwarzenegger had it right.
It's get your aunt to Mars and the rest of your family. Yep. They'll all enjoy it. It's very similar to Earth.
I'd love to see that marketing campaign. Earth, of course, stays constant at 1 week, which is the time since you looked at me, dropped your arms to the sides and said you're sorry. Venus, day on Venus, this is like that was really quite short, but now it's 1,701 days.
Yes. Venus rotates. Yeah, so
Venus rotates slower than it orbits.
Yeah. I think. Yeah. It's very slow. There's an idea that Venus got whacked by something very, very hard that reversed its rotation because it rotates in opposite direction to all the other planets. Like Uranus is tipped over onto its side, but the other ones all seem to rotate the same direction. But Venus is doing its own damn thing.
And
it's crazy.
And its surface is like really flat. And scientists are like, things get really flat when something hits them real hard and it liquefies everything.
Yeah. Well, there's also catastrophic resurfacing. So Venus doesn't have tectonic plates like we have, we don't think. But there seems to be every 500 million years, he pulls a number out of somewhere. There's an idea that has catastrophic resurfacing. Yes, I pulled it out of the planet next to Neptune. And
for the listeners, Greg could see me making that joke in my head.
So they think that every half a billion years or so, it just totally restructures itself. It flips. Something goes, the pressure builds up or something, and it cracks and everything goes horribly wrong on the surface of the planet and it just cleans its slate clean. It cools down and it starts again.
Does a full reformat.
So, yeah, it does.
And a little tiny Mercury at the center, which was real quick, like it gets around the sun like a rash.
Yeah.
but it rotates real slowly as well, and it changes to 410 days.
Yeah.
So if you want your week off, take it on Venus.
Is it? Is that your? I should know this, but I'm thinking now. Is that because Mars? Is that because Mercury is tidally locked with? No, it can't be tidally locked with the sun because it would never. That would make its year the same as its day because it would always be facing the same side.
Yeah. So and that's not what happens.
No. So it's not quite tidally locked yet. It's probably on its way.
It might be. I don't know. You'd have to talk to someone who knew this sort of stuff.
Yeah, some sort of astronomy. There's a lot of astrophysics out there. I'm not meant to know everything.
Yeah, but there's a lot more nothing.
That's very good.
Like, the actual stuff you're studying is like tiny compared to the field that you're studying it in.
That's so mean. Like all the other scientists have to deal with everything inside the Kármán line, 100 Ks up. Everything they do, everything is all inside that. As astrophysicists have to deal with everything outside of that. And let me tell you, Dan, there's a lot more outside the Kármán line than there is inside the Kármán line.
Sounds pretty like a pretty lazy pursuit to me.
And really, 99.9999999% is literally nothing. But shut up.
Yeah, that sounds like a day off to me.
I'm going to get Dr. Natasha Hurley-Walker to come and, I don't know,
prune something of me.
Prune your hedges.
Yeah.
World's weirdest threat. I just realized I just sounded like a little kid telling a slightly bigger kid that they're going to get their big sister to come and beat you up.
Yeah.
I'm going to get my big friend Natasha to come and slap you around.
Bring it. Bring it. H-W. You have been listening to episode 200 of Smart Enough to Know Better. I'm Dan at smartenough.org.
And I am Greg at smartenough.org.
As always, you can press all the buttons on the website and interact and maybe congratulate us on 200 asterisk episodes.
Insert your number here. How many episodes is it, people? Should we do a prize for that? Should we do
years.
12 years? Should we do a prize for that? I mean, people could just look it up and count them, and that wouldn't be any way of doing it. But I wonder if people – there's no way of keeping
624
it.
Weeks since you looked at me, dropped your hands to one side and said, I'm sorry.
You're bringing the joke back, I see.
Yeah. Had to do a bit of maths first, but I got there. If you want to support the podcast, you can buy a shirt or you can become a patron, or, hey, look, it's episode 200. Why not drop a tip in the tip jar?
Look at you.
Like, actually, all you persons out there who are like, oh, this is all just free and stuff that these guys do for us.
I want more.
Maybe you're like, hey, maybe one day I'll drop a tip in the tip jar. How about a big celebratory 12-year tip?
Maybe. Look, money's fine and all the rest and, you know, blah, 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 capitalism. But I would actually like people to write a really fun an interesting review on whatever their reviewing thingy of choice is, and let us know where it is and what you've written. And if you've written a good one, I'm going to pick one I know about. I'm not going to go trawling the internet looking everywhere. You tell me. You do some work. For God's sakes, do some work, people. And I'm going to read the best one out. So make it fun, interesting. Make it something that you think would fit the podcast. Let us know what you've done, and I will read out the review in the future when you've done it. Yeah, because I'm interested to see what you write. How do you think of this podcast? How would you sell this podcast? How are you going to review it and make me care and make everyone care? I do care, but how do you show that?
Well, maybe you become a patron and you give us $5 US a month.
Wow.
And then we read your name out on the podcast.
Nice.
So a very big special 200th episode. Thank you to Andrew Potts, Matt Ewers, Avery Greenbury, Andrew Whitehurst, Gronje Maguire, Ilana Mitchell, Elizabeth Yunkin, Ivand, Lindsay Jenkinson, Matthew Toy, Andrew Trousdale, Britta Rogoski, Sean Seifkin, and Mariana Scott.
Yay!
Mariana actually introduced herself and told me that her donations to the Patreon are all for me.
She did.
And none for Greg.
Yeah.
Because it's Canadian currency, and you probably don't want her filthy coins anyway.
And she's right. I haven't bagged out the Canadians for a long time because I thought that wound was healing, but now our patron, who very kindly gave us some Canadian dollars, has reopened a wound. Oh, you will reap the whirlwind. Oh, how you will reap.
You're missing out, Greg, because that Canadian stuff is great. Like, I mean, the little coins are crap and the notes are garbage paper, but they've got, $1 coins.
Yeah.
And we got $1 coins a long time ago, too. We stuck kangaroos on there, of course we fucking did. And then, but then we released like a $2 coin, which is like smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, what are you doing? In Canada, they came out with a dollar coin that looked just like ours, and they stuck a Canadian loon on there, and they called it a loonie.
Nice.
It's like, oh, can you spare a loonie? And then they came out with a $2 coin, which is gorgeous. It's got like, it's like slightly bigger, and it's got like gold on the outside, and it's like a two-part coin with like silver on the inside and gold on the outside. And you know what they called it?
What's that?
A toonie.
That's...
Is that gorgeous?
No.
They got loonies and toonies.
It's a pun.
It's so Canadian. It's so Canadian.
I like loonies.
Like Canadian feels like the warm, affectionate father figure of the planet.
Coins, Dan. There's this little thing called the pandemic. Coins don't have coins. Also, paper money. What are you doing? It's the 20th century. Get the program. Australia created polymer banknotes, and we very kindly sold it around the world. Get on the board.
They may have updated.
Oh, okay. Well, then I take it back, but I still hate you.
I haven't been in Canada for 2 decades.
I see, Dan. Thanks. Thanks, Dan.
But they're coins. I love them.
Coins.
Yeah. All right. So if you pay for the top tier of the – what are we doing? If you pay for the top tier of the patron, then I have to insult you.
Mm.
So – in theme with the Walk of Shame, you guys are getting planet-based insults. Right. And I can't believe I've never done this before.
Mm-hmm.
So starting from the inside out, Mercury. Actually, Mercury is hot, and that's a good thing. So we're skipping that one. Robert Shouten, you have terrible gas. Tom Siri, third planet. Tom Siri, you are synonymous with dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth planet. Michael Kedah, your moons are weird and lumpy.
Sure. Maybe captured, stolen, maybe not.
Ooh. Morden O'Hare, you've got a big spot.
Sure.
Okay. Now we're up to Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I like Saturn, and you can tell I like Saturn. It's very clear that I like it. Steve Eichenhout, you're an anus.
Sure. We're not even going to try that one. It writes itself.
Yeah. Yeah. Neptune, the god of the sea, who condemns and draws down the hubris-filled Mortons to his inky void. Can't fault that guy this week. Top marks.
Oh.
So let's move on.
Oh. That's horrible.
Finally, Joey Wesley, you behave eccentrically.
Mm-hmm.
And just to satisfy the pedants, you also do not exert dominance in your neighborhood. And a big thank you.
I like that far too much. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I thought you might. I thought that would be right up your alley.
Yeah, just a... the only people who like you are Americans and everyone else has given up on you.
And finally, to the other top-tier patrons who insist that I do not insult them, you guys are my whole world. Al Batson, Michael Barnes, Eric Wilson, Steve Stewart, and Scott Driscoll.
Oh, thank you. I had an interesting run-in. This has never happened to me before. It's so strange. So I was doing my normal everyday job in the institute I work at, and we had invited teachers to come into the institute to have a look around. So I'd organized them to visit a lab, and the lab technicians and the research scientists were taking the teachers around up there. And afterwards, I'd organize a lunch for everyone to come down to. We had so much extra lunch that I said, hey, don't just have the scientists who helped. Just bring everyone from your lab, like as many people as you like, just bring them on down, have some lunch with us. And all these scientists turned up and all these other people turned up to eat lunch and chat with the teachers. And it was great. I was chatting to this nice man called Adrian. And Adrian said to me, do you have a podcast? And I sort of looked askance at him because I don't talk about it outside. I'm very embarrassed. I just don't sort of keep, I just disconnect these things, my work life and the podcast. Not that it's a problem. I just don't sort of talk around it too much outside it. And I was like, yes. And he went, oh, smart enough to know better. And I went, yes. And then went, you're Gregoire. And I went, ah, yes. And my brain, I was in one mode of thinking and I had to suddenly flip over to another mode of thinking. And it was so weird. He didn't know that I worked in the same building as him. I didn't know he worked in the same building. He wasn't, he's a data engineer, I do believe, at the room. So he's not a research scientist. He kept telling me, I'm not a research scientist. I was like, yes, you're doing very well. Don't mind. You're doing okay. And he heard my voice and was like, wait, I know this voice. And he just, I was like, that's so bizarre. So thank you, Adrian. It was really lovely to meet you. And I did say I'd give him a shout out. And here it is for the 200th episode. Thank you, Adrian, for being brave enough to say hi, and I hope I didn't freak you out too much. When I was kind of weirdly standing there looking a bit kind of confused by it all, one of the other scientists, I think he was a scientist, one of the people there sort of said, oh, what are you talking about? And Adrian went, oh, I listened to his podcast. And she went, oh, what podcast? And went, oh, Smart Enough to Know Better. And she went, oh, yeah, he's talked about that before. So she hadn't listened to it. It's like, oh, yay, thank you. So he'd obviously mentioned it to other people. Hopefully it wasn't a never listen to this podcast.
You should take your inspiration from this, listeners, and share it with the world.
Share it with labs in your general area. So thank you once again to Adrian, and I really appreciate it. It was a very strange experience and lovely, so thank you very much.
Oh, there is one more person I'd like to thank. You, Gregoire.
Oh.
Thank you for doing this podcast with me.
Thank you, Dan Beeston. It has been an exciting road. You're my podcast partner. We're married in the podcast. I think we spend more time chatting to each other than some people.
Certainly
talk to
legally bound.
We are. It's true. It's true. When one goes down, we'll take the other one with us. It's all part of the contract. It's all part of the contract. Wait, I don't obviously know what a marriage is. That's what I think a marriage is. Yeah. You all go down together.
And to celebrate our bicentennial, apparently we'll be doing more podcasts this month.
Infinite
so,
podcasts.
You know what? Next episode, we've got an exciting announcement.
Ooh. Do we?
Yeah.
We haven't discussed this, have we? We haven't discussed
this. And as we always like to say,
200, okay!
It was opulent. Like it had like hedges out the front that you have to get someone to trim.
Oh my God. That's more cost, Dan. What are you doing?
Yeah, I know. No, it's we didn't buy it.
Why doesn't this lovely area that I live in, this not city, have a cinema and a big shopping center and a sports center and a massive number of schools and sewerage that it can work and high speed internet and a squash court and a bowls club and a good pubs and you go, what you've just said is you want a city. You've just said you want a city. Yeah, yeah, but I don't want to. I just want a city, but I don't want it. I don't want to live in the city. I just want the city to come here, get everything I want. Yeah, but it doesn't work that way.
You just reamed off a whole list of like all these big draws, and I'm like, ugh.
Yes. Well, I know. Average.
And then I got to one, and I'm like, I can poop in the garden.
It'll keep my hedges down.
Don't have to pay the valet to trim the hedges. Right.
As long as I have curry every month or so, I can keep the hedge under control. Punishing the hedge.
Oh, we're on fire today. You know, spreading rapidly and chaotically.
Destroying all it touches.